Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's a Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 24th day of March 2020, day 8 of isolation. Dear diary, I am still stuck in the house. I'm doing okay with it because I prefer to be in the house. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Appreciate every single one of you writing and rating it on iTunes. Even the people who just flooded the review things with, I don't like that he swore. I'll never listen again. One-star reviews. I appreciate the effort. You won't be around to hear it anymore because your delicate ears can't possibly handle an occasional F word, but good on you. You stood for something. I do find it interesting that people who couldn't be bothered to write a review for a show that they claim that they used to love hear a couple of F-bombs and go, oh, I can't listen anymore. They're compelled to write that. All right. I mean, everybody needs a hobby, I suppose. So the rest of you, I appreciate you listening and telling a friend. It's the perfect home companion for isolation. That's how I like to think of myself. Great show in line for you today. The last half hour is an interview with Sean Parnell, who is running for Congress. He's been on this show a couple of times in the past. He is running for Congress up in Pennsylvania. One of the good guys trying to take back a seat from the Democrats that the Democrats never should have won in the first place. He's got a heck of a fight. I just wanted to find out how different areas of the country are doing or handling this. Western Pennsylvania, wildly important to the presidential race. Plus, that district is wildly important to Pennsylvania. And I was curious, how does somebody run for Congress at a time when you can't really go out and meet anybody? You can't really campaign in the traditional sense. So we get into all of that. Plus, I put forth my idea of adopting a district. And I think this, you'll hear me explain it in the interview. But I think this is wildly important and such a good idea. And I'm not just saying that because my brilliant brain came up with it, although that helps. I think, look, I live in a wildly blue state and an incredibly blue district. My member of Congress is never, ever going to be defeated by a Republican, maybe by a socialist, maybe by a challenger in the Democratic Party, but I repeat myself, but never by a Republican, never going to be a conservative. So you look around the country and there are like 35 districts where President Trump won, where Republicans used to hold that seat recently until 2018, that are winnable districts. And you adopt somebody, you do some research, you find out somebody that you like of those candidates. And instead of wasting your money on whatever Republican is essentially a ticket balancer in your 80% Democratic district, you go and adopt another race. Not to write off on your taxes or anything, but if you want to donate to it. If that's what you normally do, if you want a phone bank, you can phone bank from home for these people. All of them offer remote, you know, here's an email list of numbers to call. Here's people to call. Here's what to say. Here's how to help us out. There are many ways you can help Republican candidates across the country that don't necessarily involve giving campaign contributions. So I recommend you adopt a district, adopt a candidate someplace else. You say, well, this person doesn't represent me. I should really focus on that. Yeah, in an ideal world, but thanks to gerrymandering, your district is, if it's heavily Democratic, is going to remain heavily Democratic. But I'll tell you what, I don't live in Adam Schiff's district, but how Adam Schiff votes impacts me. I live on the other side of the country from Adam Schiff's district, and how Adam Schiff votes affects me. So I have a vested interest in seeing someone like Adam Schiff lose. Now, Adam Schiff is in one of those safe districts. I'm just using him as an example. There are 435 voting members of the House of Representatives. Each and every one of them has a vote that impacts you no matter where you live. So in essence, you have a vested interest in who wins those districts. And if we can flip those districts back to Republican, we can retake the House of Representatives and get rid of this garbage game that Democrats are playing that we're going to get into in the first half of the show today. Just the absolute, total, and utter, it's not going to be a swearing show, but there's going to be this total bullshit that they're trying to shove into this bill. What are the Democrats' priority? Pretty much anything you can imagine except you. Here's just one example from Nancy Pelosi's bill. After coming back and torpedoing, suicide bombing, if you will, the bipartisan Senate bill over the weekend, Nancy Pelosi went back. It's weird, because on Sunday she said, I'm just going to go and write my own bill. And then the next day she had a 1,400-page bill. Can you say set up? Legislation takes a little bit longer than that to write. But in her massive bill, most of it has nothing to do with coronavirus. It is a liberal wet dream list. So we have this one, pay equity. This is for companies that the government helps stay afloat because the government helped sink them. Pay equity. A comparison of pay amongst racial and ethnic minorities and, to the extent possible, results disaggregated by ethnic group. See, they want it down. They want the finite detail because to the left, all you are is your skin tone. As compared to their white counterparts, and comparison pay between men and women for similar roles and assignments. So the government ruins your business. Government shuts down the economy in the name of a health emergency. You, as a good corporate citizen, do that. You comply with that. The government says, yeah, okay, we're going to help you get whole again. You say, oh, thank you, government. I appreciate that because you really screwed me over. And the government says, but if you want to stay in business, we're going to need all this information. You're going to suddenly have to start doing, and if you don't meet our standards, we're going to screw you. So this is essentially regulating the entire private sector. The next thing on the list, right after pay equity, corporate and board diversity. Corporate board demographic data include, this is what companies, if they accept help from the government after the government hurt them, corporate and board demographic data, including total number of board members, gender, race, and ethnic identity of board members, and to the extent possible, results disaggregated by ethnic group, as otherwise known or provided voluntarily, board position titles, as well as any leadership and subcommittee assignments. These people are insane. These people are worse than insane, actually. They're really bad people. They really are. Honestly, honest to goodness, bad people. I don't like to make that judgment against people very often, but they are bad people. There are provisions in there to make sure that all states have early voting and make sure that states have same-day voter registration. Again, I have a shiny dollar coin for anybody who can show me a reason as to why that is anything related to coronavirus. You can't. Because it's not. It is the liberal wet dream. It is as if they flung open their spank bank and Nancy Pelosi said, bring in your contents and show me what you want. And we will make sure the country gets it for you because we've got them over a barrel. That's what I mean by evil. That's who these people are. Just to put a fine point on it, way, way back on March 19th, which, if I remember correctly, is last Thursday, The Hill newspaper reported, headline, quote, House Democrats eyeing much broader Phase 3 stimulus. Now, the original deal with the stimulus bills were that Phase 2 would be written by the House of Representatives and the Republicans would take it up and pretty much pass it in the, or at least give it a vote in the Senate, which is what they did. Democrats groused, whined, pissed, and moaned that Mitch McConnell was dragging his feet. Why hasn't he already passed this bill? Why is he out there on recess this week when something so pressing and important is happening in Washington? Well, it's because Nancy Pelosi didn't send over the freaking bill until Monday morning. It had nothing to do with it. Even if Mitch McConnell were in town, he could not have passed it because the House had not sent it over. Now, the House did not send it over because, as you heard Brian Darling say the other day, the 150-ish page bill that, you know, granted paid sick leave to people who are affected by coronavirus, that bill needed a 50-page correction, called a technical correction, but they screwed it up so badly that they had to write a third of it again. So even if the Senate had been in session, and even if the Senate had been voting on a bill they didn't have yet, but if Nancy Pelosi had bothered to send it over to the Senate earlier, the Senate would have had to have voted yet again because Democrats screwed up writing it so badly. But that's not why I'm bringing up this Hill article. The Hill article reads thusly. House Democrats are indicating they want to go bigger and broader than the already massive economic stimulus package offered by Senate Republicans to blunt the coronavirus pandemic. On a Thursday conference call featuring more than 200 members of the House Democratic Caucus, lawmakers one by one laid out a sweeping wish list of provisions they want to see, including the package including a boost in infrastructure spending, an expansion of Social Security benefits, and funding for states to set up all mail voting systems in the event the pandemic extends into November's elections. None of which really has anything to do with the pandemic, but this is where it gets telling. The very next paragraph, the third one in this one, quote, it's a quote from Majority Whip James Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina. Remember him? He's the one credited with being the kingmaker for Joe Biden and saving his bacon in South Carolina. He said on that call, he told his fellow lawmakers, quote, this is a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. And there you have it. The contents of the spank bank of the Democratic left just flung wide open for the whole world to see. We can remake this whole country right now. We've got them over a barrel because they believe that if the economy goes down the toilet, Donald Trump will get the blame. They know this, they believe this, because they have their fellow travelers, the Gestapo, in the media who will willingly lie to the American people for the cause. Hell, they've been doing it for free. Why not do it for the cause? Why not do it for the electoral cause? They know they'll have cover from MSNBC, from CNN, from CBS, from the New York Times, from the Washington Post. I told you yesterday about how the New York Times three times changed their headline. Remember that? The headline was about how Democrats were really screwing up. Democrats blocked the bill. Then suddenly it was Democrats blocked the bill for more worker protection. Then it was, who can figure out why this bill was blocked? Nobody could ever know. It's just a complete and total mystery. That's the Democratic Party. The New York Times is their bitch. The exact headline, the original headline, Democrats block action on $1.8 trillion stimulus. Then, Democrats block action on stimulus plan seeking worker protections. And it's like, oh, okay, they're going to just seek worker protections. But still, Democrats didn't like that because it shines some blame on Democrats. So the final headline the New York Times ended up with was, partisan divide threatens bill on rescue, or threatens a rescue deal. Huh? Yeah, partisan divide threatens deal on rescue bill. Oh, that's weird. Then just today, as if to put a fine point on it, to show just how much of their bitch the New York Times is to the Democratic Party, they ran an editorial yesterday. The headline, "The Coronavirus Bailout Stalled, and it's Mitch McConnell's fault." Yes, it's all Mitch McConnell's fault. Of course, there's no mention in here of how Nancy Pelosi came in and took a giant crap all over the deal that they had cut and the bill they had agreed to pass. No, no mention of Nancy. They don't even bother to mention where she parked her broom when she returned back to town. It is all just straight up evil Mitch McConnell's fault. Why? Because the alternative would be the truth, and the truth is harmful to Democrats. And the New York Times isn't about to let the truth that is harmful to Democrats go through unnoticed, uncommented on. They focus on a few things in the bill that they say these are beyond the pale. Of course, they are hypotheticals about aspects of the bill that might come to pass. Oh, corporate bailouts could maybe help Donald Trump's businesses. Okay, yeah, well, let us know about that. And if they do, then we voters can take it out on him come November. But don't take it out on the entirety of the U.S. economy because you think that Donald Trump might could maybe benefit by this somehow. Yet that's the liberal logic. The New York Times doesn't mention anything about the Democrats' wish list that they stuffed into Nancy Pelosi's box of bills. I just needed to breathe there. Nothing conspicuous, nothing outrageous. It's just normal breath. But that is how these people work. Let's see. Charlie Spearing over at Breitbart has a list of some of the thing about this is all the lists are inconclusive. They're not complete because the bill is so damn big. They're being written as we speak. One of the things, increase fuel emission standards for airlines receiving funds and carbon offsets. Now, how does that help? You cripple, the government cripples the airline industry. Forcing, they're really teetering on the edge of bankruptcy most of the time. The government comes in and says, look over the edge, isn't that fun? We can really, really screw you if we want to screw you. And the government offers a lifeline, but there's a big fat string attached. You've got to offer some carbon offsets. You've got to increase your fuel efficiency. Or else just go out of business. To hell with you. They don't care. This is about their green agenda. Payment for up to $10,000 in student loans. Huh? How does that? Because I have student loans. I have about, I think I have more than $10,000 in student loans. Is that going to give me coronavirus? Or is it less, if you have less than $10,000 in student loans, do you have coronavirus? I don't know. The thing reads, minimum student loan relief as a result of COVID-19 national emergency, not later than 270 days after the last day of the COVID-19 emergency period, the secretaries concerned shall jointly carry out a program under which a qualified borrower with respect to the covered loans and private education loans of such qualified borrower shall receive in accordance with paragraph 3 an amount equal to the lesser of the following: A, the total amount of each covered loan and each private education loan of the borrower, or $10,000. Well, congratulations. Who knew that I was going to win the coronavirus lottery? They want same-day voter registration, early voting, voting by mail, and ballot harvesting. This is how they won so many of the congressional seats out in California. They want to be able to send their operatives to people's houses to, quote, pick up their ballots. Don't worry, I'll send it in. You don't have to worry about postage. You don't have to worry about going to the post office. I'll get it. And in fact, you don't even have to worry about filling it out. I'll do that for you. And if they go to pick up all the Democrats' ballots, guess what happens? More Democrats vote. Democrats who didn't intend to vote. Democrats who forgot to vote. Whatever the case is, somebody shows up knocking at your door and says, I'll wait while you fill out your ballot. Used to be illegal. Now it's legal in California. And Democrats are doing even better than usual. Why? Because they want Nazi-esque type power. They want absolute control. They want same-day voter registration because, you know, that first Tuesday after the first Monday in November sometimes just sneaks up and slaps you on the ass. You just don't know it's coming. Unless you're Amish, I don't know how you couldn't be aware of the fact that the election is coming up. And unless you're incredibly stupid, I don't know how you could know whether or not you're registered to vote. And if you are either one of those things, less so the first one, but still, I don't want you to vote. They also want availability for internet for voter registration. You got to make, again, how easy do you have to make it to vote? You almost have to choose not to vote as it stands. Yet, they are here holding up the economy of the United States of America, demanding that we make it easier for people, permitting voters to designate other persons to return a ballot. Why, there's their voter harvesting thing. Now, the secret ballot in this country is sacred, but every once in a while, Big Brother Democrat needs a peek at your ballot just in case you filled it out incorrectly. And won't you feel like a fool if you did and they make the corrections for you? You don't have to feel like a fool anymore because they will make sure that you fill it out correctly. These people are sick. These people are awful. These people are evil. Evil. There is no doubt about it. There is no question about it. And the Hill newspaper reported that Democrats want the bill and they want to put money into it for Planned Parenthood. Of course they do. They are abortion fetishes. While all the stuff in the spank bank I've told you about to this point does get them aroused to finish the job, to truly finish the job, you gotta have the money for abortion in there. That instead of calling out their partners' names, I imagine they call out Planned Parenthood while they're having sex, right at the end, right there. This is your Democratic Party, ladies and gentlemen. Every one of these people should burn in hell for what they're doing to this country. And before they get there, they should burn at the ballot box. These people need to be destroyed, decimated, just wiped off the face of the ballot by the voters. How anybody could vote for these people after this, I didn't understand it before. I really don't understand it now. There is a special place in hell, and they have upgraded their ticket on that train to hell to first class, deservedly so. They're going to get themselves a suite on the train to hell. Hell, even their own Pullman car. This is how far they've gone. This is how far they are willing to go in the face of a crisis that is killing Americans and could damage the lives of millions more Americans through a complete collapse of the economy. One of the things that the Democrats are insisting upon is, you guessed for it, automatic extension of non-immigrant visas. I've told you all along, Democrats have a lot of priorities and none of them are you. That has never been more true than this. They want to extend people being in this country. They want to feed money to sanctuary cities. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's to the point that it is more advantageous to be in this country illegally than it is to be a legal citizen. These people are just gross. There's just no other word for it. They are just gross. Speaking of gross people, the media is really pathetic. I watched the daily coronavirus task force briefing that all of the Democrats are going, you shouldn't even broadcast these things because it's so much misinformation. So they're really bad. They're really upset and mad because the briefing lets the public see that Donald Trump is on this thing, right? That Donald Trump is on top of this. He knows his stuff. He's got a really good team around him. It gives calm. Calm is not a friend of the Democrats. They are aided by anger, by fear, by emotion. Rational thought is their kryptonite. So the the left, rather than focusing on the good news that the president was talking about yesterday, they decided to go on a wild speculation spree. Where, oh, where is Dr. Anthony Fauci? Why was he not at the press briefing? What's going on? Is he on the back bench? Is he being pushed out? Is he on the way out? He was critical of Trump in an interview. Is this the end for Dr. Fauci? Well, just the other day, I didn't have the clip. I didn't feel like going to hunt for the clip, because if you just pay attention without your head, if you pull your head out of your ass and then you clean what was in your eyes out of your eyes and out of your ears, you can see for yourself that Dr. Fauci is not there every single day. Why is Dr. Fauci not there every single day? Because not every single day do they talk about something that is relevant to Dr. Fauci's area of expertise. And sometimes, believe it or not, the man has to work. He isn't just a PR person. He is a clinician. So he goes back to the National Institutes of Health and does lab work, right? That's how it should be. But because he didn't show up yesterday, they're going, oh my God, is Dr. Fauci on the way out? They were obsessed with it. Will Donald Trump listen? Will you listen to Dr. Fauci about when to reopen the economy, Mr. President? I'm sorry. I don't remember Dr. Fauci's. I'm glad he's there. Don't get me wrong. But remembering back as best I can, now granted it's been a few years, I don't remember seeing Dr. Fauci's name on the ballot in 2016. Call me crazy, but I wasn't really looking for it, so maybe it was there. But I seem to recall it being Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I could have been one of the third lesser parties. What in the hell does Dr. Fauci's opinion about how best to handle the economic issues before the United States of America have to do with when the president decides to loosen some of the restrictions that the government has imposed on people that are crippling the economy? It, of course, has nothing to do with that whatsoever. Yet there were at least a half a dozen questions yesterday. Well, you're saying that you're thinking about loosening some of these restrictions. What does Dr. Fauci say about this? Okay, where's Dr. Fauci's PhD in economics from? Where is can I see Dr. Fauci's checkbook? Can he balance that thing? Am I supposed to care? You want to talk about infectious diseases? Dr. Fauci is your guy. You want to talk about how not to ruin the jobs of 100 million Americans? I don't really care what Dr. Fauci has to say. You want to hit a curveball? You go get Mike Trout. And you say, Mike Trout, how do you hit a curveball? You want to, I don't know, avoid an economic iceberg? You don't go, hey, Mike Trout, put down that baseball bat and come over here and let's spitball some ideas on how to make sure people's lives aren't ruined. Forgive me if that's a little cynical, but that's the quality of journalism we're getting these days. You can see why Democrats can act with impunity toward their towards this crisis and the economic bailout that the country, it's not even really a bailout. It's more of a making whole because the government made half. You know that Democrats, when you're getting quality questions like, what does Fauci say about how should we continue with economic sanctions against North Korea? Can we, this is a question for Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci, my wife and I have not been as intimate as I'd like to have been. What do you think about that? Dr. Fauci, my child is talking, sassing back. Do you run to Dr. Fauci for everything? Here's an idea. There is an election coming up. Dr. Fauci can put his name on the ballot. Except Dr. Fauci doesn't want to be president. It's just journalists who want him to be president. So might I suggest that all of you, rather than just knee-jerk checking the box for Joe Biden, you write in Dr. Anthony Fauci. Okay? Can you do that? And then maybe until then, you focus on the issue at hand, you freaking morons. Is that too much to ask? Pull your head out of last night's dinner and let's do some serious journalisming. I realize it's been a while. You probably don't remember how. Maybe just maybe, since they're only letting like 8 people in the White House press briefing room at a time because of social distancing, you pick 8 people who A, can string together a coherent sentence, who B, are not full-blown liberal hack activist lunatics, and C, aren't dumb as a stump, with all due respect to stumps. Those things, any one of those criteria being met, I'm not entirely sure that anybody in the entire White House press corps would meet all 3 of those criteria. But a boy can dream, can't we? Can't we? Yes, I think we can. All right, before we get to the Sean Parnell interview, let me tell you about today's lovely sponsor, Ancient Life Oil from ancientlifeoil.com, the CBD oil of champions, quite frankly. I just finished off today my last bottle. Well, not my last bottle. I have a couple bottles. I bought a few in advance, but my latest bottle. Because it this time, you know, with kids running around and everything going on, you get stress, you have difficulty sleeping. That's where CBD oil comes in. And don't worry, it's not going to get you high. It's got no THC. It's got such a minute amount of THC that if you drank the whole thing, you'd be fine. You wouldn't even get high. What it will do is it'll help you. My eye strain kills me at the end of the day. Drops of CBD oil. One of those little droppers under my tongue. Of CBD oil takes away that stress and helps me drift off to sleep. Go to ancientlifeoil.com. They have a whole cabinet sort of full of products to help you feel better, to give you more energy, to help you relax, to help you alleviate pain. It also helps with my minor knee pain. I swear by this stuff, but don't take my word for it. Search for yourself and see what other people are seeing about CBD oil. When you see that they're not crazy, try the best 100% organic CBD oil, and at checkout, enter the promo code Derek and click apply, and you get free shipping on whatever your order is. Plus, they're having great sales right now, so you can't beat it. It's just savings left and right. You help the show, you help yourself, and it's the circle of life. AncientLifeOil.com, promo code Derek, click apply. Okay, now we turn to our interview. And I like doing these interviews for now because, A, while I just literally spoke for 30 minutes without a break, off the top of my head, by the way, to those podcasters out there who read their scripts, I like to get the perspective of what's going on around the country, elsewhere in the country. You know, yesterday we talked to Brian. We'll have Brian back on just because he knows this stuff and how the Hill works. But Sean Parnell is in Western Pennsylvania. Western Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania itself is wildly important to the upcoming election. I want to get a perspective of other people around the country. I have a buddy who's in the Michigan legislature. I'm going to try to get him on in the near future, see how they're doing. I'm going to keep bothering David Limbaugh until he has a moment to come join us. We'll maybe talk to, I've got a lot of choices out in California and all across the country. So I just want to get a sense and touch base around the country with how the rest of the country is handling it, how people outside the Beltway view the mess that is Washington, D.C., and all that good stuff. Who knows? By the time, in between me being done recording this and you being able to hear it, maybe the Democrats will have come to their senses. There's a first time for everything, and the Senate will have passed a bill. Seems unlikely, but entirely possible. In any event, I'll be here to cover it all. We shall go now to the Sean Parnell interview. 3-time returning champion now. It's Sean Parnell. He's author of best-selling books. He's got the great novels that we've had him on the show for, and I highly recommend that you get the audiobooks. Forget it. Just search his name. But most importantly, especially for the country right now, he's running for Congress. Most people sit on the sidelines and say somebody should do something about this. He's actually doing something about this. He's running in the 17th Congressional District in Pennsylvania against Democrat Connor Lamb. It's Sean Parnell. Sean, thank you for taking the time.
Hey, you're welcome, Derek. Hey, you know what you have to get? You have to get like a championship belt. I've been back 3 times. I think I deserve a belt.
You deserve, it's probably going to be brown leather because we've had two other people who've been on more. When your next book, when your next novel comes out, we'll get you at least a t-shirt. How's that?
That sounds great. like
before
that.
There are a lot of reasons I wanted to talk to you, and I'm rather curious about how one runs for Congress as a challenger in a time of mass self-quarantine. But you are out there in Western Pennsylvania, the Pittsburgh area, the heart of the Rust Belt of this country. And I want to know from as many people as I can how the people out there are holding up.
Oh, you know, they're really struggling. I mean, you know, I've been taking calls for the last 48 hours from constituents and small businesses. They're just utterly panicked because, you know, I think, you know, while we have to take this the virus and our response and our pandemic strategy very, very seriously, Derek, I think the American people, especially here in PA 17, are wondering how they're going to put food on their table. I mean, they're in very real danger of being laid off if they haven't been laid off already. And going bankrupt and losing everything. So, you know, our strategy as we continue to look at the data, right? And that's going to be really important when we refine our pandemic strategy, is to look at the data, specifically the mortality rate. Our strategy has to be twofold. It has to be respond in the best way possible to keep people healthy, but also keep people employed so we can keep this economy going. One of the things that we saw very early on, like when we had to sort of go on lockdown here and social distance, was that when we shut down the schools, right? Like a lot of kids, a lot of our most vulnerable children rely on two meals a day at school, breakfast and right. lunch. And that's the only food they get, man. And so when my campaign and the volunteers, we call them Parnell's Platoon, it's kind of cool. People kind of dig it. We sort of shifted our campaign operation to, you know, dropping off food at the Salvation Army, which already has a program in place to get these kids school lunches and make sure that they have good nutrition and that they're actually eating through this horrible crisis. And it's been kind of an awesome thing to behold, you know. By the way, we're following CDC guidelines. You know, it's like instead of going, you know, when you go to the grocery store, right, instead of buying that extra pack of toilet paper, maybe buy a lunch pack of chips or something and swing by the Salvation Army in your community and drop them off so that they have that food to give kids lunches, you know? Bottom line is people are struggling, you know? And I think...
How is their mentality, though? Are they... There are some people I'm seeing after a week on Twitter sort of making sort of cries for help, saying, you know, this is harder than I thought. These are generally people who live alone. But it's still, I mean, I'm at home with a wife and two kids, and every once in a while I just kill to be left alone. But it is this sort of weird thing where I have friends who live not far from here who on a normal Saturday, I'd call them up and say, hey, you want to come over? I've got some stuff to show you, or you want to hang out or whatever. You can't do that. Video chatting can only take you so far. The mentality that people, you know, the food obviously is wildly important, but so is maintaining your sanity.
Yeah, and your rights. You know, this is people in Western Pennsylvania, they love their freedom and, you know, they work hard and they play hard and, you know, they're patriotic. And I'm talking Democrats and Republicans, you know, and independents. It's, you know, so that's why I said earlier, I think people are. I mean, they're not dejected or depressed. I mean, they want to go back to work, you know.
Right.
I don't think that, you know, I think we need to get cash into the hands of the most vulnerable among us, right? I'm all for that in terms of a pandemic response, right, a relief package. But most people don't want to become a de facto employee of the government. They want their jobs back. So, you know, I think it's incumbent upon our leaders to give them a sense of structure, like, yes, here's the strategy. The goal is to flatten the curve, yes, but we also have to be steadfast protectors of our economy to make sure that you have a job to go back to, you know? And I think the people of Western Pennsylvania are tough, and everywhere I go, and I've got to, you know, run into the grocery store or getting gas or whatever, people seem to be following the CDC guidelines here. And that's what I've said from the very beginning. We don't need to close down businesses. We should afford them the freedom to operate in some limited capacity as long as they are following CDC guidelines, right? That way, when we emerge from this crisis, we actually have an economy to come back to that's as strong as possible.
That's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because I think you're in a unique position, and your position as leading the 10th Mountain Division, the Army's 10th Mountain Division of the Rangers over in Afghanistan, and taking orders from above and having to execute orders. There are many times where you have to, there's no good option, but there's a mission. Oh, you know what right. I mean?
Oh, yeah, and I do. Yeah.
We have a situation here where, yes, we can handle a couple of weeks. We can handle a couple of weeks, but there comes a point where we won't be able to handle more. And how do you make that decision? How do you realize you're to that point when the cure is worse than the disease?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you know, and we've heard, you know, certainly President Trump talk about we're at war with a virus and that he's a wartime president. And I agree with his rhetoric. But if you're going to use the rhetoric of war, we have to look at different types of sort of combat, right? There's total war, where there's a significant amount of collateral damage and risk for casualties on both sides and civilians are very high. And then there are strategic surgical strikes. Now we, for the most part, I mean, we rely on the latter, right? In the US military, because it's smarter. So at some point, you know, I look at it now, we're at like total war with this virus right now. And in doing so, you have to wonder, are we doing irreparable damage to our economy as we wage this war? You know, like if I had, you know, if my house wasn't infested with termites, I wouldn't burn down my home to fix or rectify the infestation, right? So moving forward, that's why I talk about looking at the data and the mortality rate and refining our pandemic strategy response so that we're being more surgical. We're protecting the most vulnerable among us. Maybe they're quarantined, maybe they have to stay home for an extended period of time, but we slowly let people go back to work as long as they're adhering to the CDC guidelines. So look, this is an unprecedented crisis. And Derek, one of the things that concerns me the most here, and that many people are not talking about this, is that we have to question whether or not what the long-term efficacy of a lockdown would be, specifically with regards to combating a virus that we don't have a vaccine for. You know, we could lock ourselves down for 2 months and do irreparable damage to our economy in the process, rack up trillions of dollars of debt, only to find ourselves, because we don't have a vaccine, right back in the same situation in November.
Only right. Some jackass hops on a plane from Beijing and comes over here and starts it all over. It only takes one domino to start the whole mess from falling.
Right. That's right. And only the next time we face it, Derek, we will be on much weaker economic footing. So, yeah, of course we have to take this virus seriously. In fact, I was one of the first people in the entire country, along with Senator Tom Cotton, to call for closing down of flights and banning travel from China into this country a day before President Trump made that call of taking this virus seriously. We still need to take it seriously, but we also have to make sure that we're protecting our economy. And by economy, I don't mean the stock market. I mean people that have a job, that want to make sure that they have a job to go back to, which is why it's, you know, there's a constellation of different things, right? A great patchwork of things that we need to do with regards to an aid package. But the first thing that we need to do is protect small businesses. 85% of our economy is driven by small business. We want to make sure that we protect small businesses to infuse them with liquidity so that they can keep the lights on and keep people employed. So that once we see through this crisis, people can go back to work and our economy can pick up right where we left off.
So we're recording this conversation Monday afternoon, about 4:00. The Democrats in the Senate have twice continued to filibuster the phase three of the coronavirus relief bill. They've passed one and two, and the number two they just took direct from the House, and you know said, okay, you guys do this one, we'll do the next one. They held up there, and Democrats are still filibustering. Maybe by the time this airs, they will have come to their senses and found some humanity in themselves. Maybe not. It doesn't matter. The fact that they would have filibustered twice this bill says more about what they are as people. When you see something like that, and you're trying to work with these people, you know, granted across the Capitol in the House, but this is the mentality. Actually, the House is more partisan over there. You're a passionate guy. You don't suffer fools lightly because your life has depended on it in several times, and the lives of your men have depended on it several times. How do you deal? How would you deal with these morons? I'm trying to think of another way to put it without swearing. You get what I'm saying? Because there's so many different questions I could lead to from that. But just first and foremost, when you watch these people talk about we need to put in protection for workers and not corporations, what if there are no corporations to go back to work for? What are you going to do then? And we need subsidies for green things and payoffs for unions and all this usual bullshit that these people do. And I don't know how, granted, the average age of a senator is like 5 years past the average death. So they're not going to rumble. They're not going to throw down. But in the House, I could see some punches being thrown if they had the filibuster.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, for me, one of the things that I learned in Afghanistan real quickly, and you hear this all the time with military movies, is like, oh, great leaders are supposed to inspire their people, right? Or great military leaders are supposed to inspire their men. Well, the fact, you know, well, the rubber met the road in Afghanistan for me when we were, you know, in firefights day in and day out. One of the things that I realized was that great people inspire their leaders. And so for me, you know, I look at, you know, being a servant leader is the bedrock of everything that I do. And I running for office is not about me. You know, that's one of the things that politicians think elections are about them. Elections aren't about them. Elections are about the people and making sure that they have a voice. And that's why I'm running. So everything that I do and all of my passion will be channeled into giving the people of PA-17 a voice. And I just got to ask, I asked Connor Lamb, who's my opponent, you know, on Twitter today, you know, how does a climate change study help Americans, help small businesses keep the lights on and help put cash in Americans' pockets during a pandemic fueled economic meltdown? Why is required early voting or provisions on official time on union collective bargaining or airline emissions? Why are these things part of a pandemic relief bill? You know, essentially, the only answer can be that the Democrats are putting politics before the American people. The American people are suffering while the Democrats play politics. And what does that mean? That means that people, gosh, and it drives me crazy when people, oh, net neutrality, oh, people are going to die. But not, that's bogus. But this is, we are in a crisis, the likes of which we have not faced before in this country, Derek. People will die and are dying, and Americans are losing their jobs while we got climate change nonsense in our pandemic relief bill. It's just unbelievable to me. So, you know, I think you can't go wrong as a leader in Washington when you're putting the people first, right? Right. As to how I work with people in a bipartisan way, well, you know, that's the job. You gotta find common areas where you can agree. And that's what's so infuriating about this bill in the Senate, Derek, is that it's bipartisan.
Democrats, they had agreed.
Yes.
And they just wanted more.
And so Nancy Pelosi comes back from San Francisco on Sunday and immediately torpedoes the bill. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's reprehensible in every way.
Yeah, I watch this and I think of those provisions that the airline mileage increase, the subsidies for wind and solar, the more collective bargaining power for unions. And I think if any of these have merit, they should be able to stand alone. This isn't the place for it. There are plenty of Republican wish lists that were not put in this bill because they're irrelevant to this bill. And they knew that it would cost Democrats votes. And to at the last hour, when 24 hours prior, Chuck Schumer was talking about how they've been working together and this is a good deal and Nancy Pelosi had been consulted, to then come in and kneecap it is shocking, not because they did it. They do this all the time. But that they would do it on something like this. I knew that Washington was full of political animals. I had no idea that they were cannibals, you know, and that's the weird and disgusting thing about this is I don't know how you go back after this. I've had Congressman Andy Harris from Maryland on my radio show. And after impeachment and the way that impeachment was run through, which was the time that this virus was spreading around the world. So talk about a distraction. Yes.
Yes.
As that was going on, I asked him, like, how can you trust the Democrats, your colleagues, your Democratic colleagues, to do anything? Because they promised a minority day hearing. They promised a whole bunch of things that they never followed through on. And he told me flat out, no. And he's been there for a number of years. As somebody who is going to step into that environment, as somebody who looks to bridge that gap. I think are you aware that you have to sort of bridge it on, you have to be both ends of the bridge, if you will. You have to be the middle span. You can't be one side reaching out to the other. And in many ways, the damage is done by the professional political class that you have to be the span itself.
Yeah. I think this is why it's so important that we the Republicans take back the majority in the House. And, the Democrats, at least right now, this is not the Democratic Party of my grandfather. My grandfather was a lifelong Union Democrat. I mean, I got Democrats in my family. It's about 50-50. So it's the Democrats now are not the Democrats of old, you know, and this crisis has shown us that they do not deserve to be in the majority in the House anymore, you know. And, you know, when we talk about like Connor, he can't do anything for the American people. The only way that we can give, or the American people, of course, but the people of PA 17, right? He votes with Nancy Pelosi 96, 98% of the time. He votes with the squad 90% of the time. Those aren't our value system here. So the only way to give the people a voice in this district, a voice, is for Connor Lamb to lose and Republicans to take back the House. And
talk a little bit about the district there. It was a very Trump district, yet Connor Lamb won. It was a special election, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It was a special election against a Republican opponent.
So how did he do that? How did he manage to be a Democrat in a blue district, in a red district?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, so the special election was actually, that victory was much more impressive because that was in a different district. So there was a special election. Connor Lamb won by about 300 votes in about an R plus 20 district. This was in 2018 when, right, you know, I don't know, the Mueller probe was just kicking off. Americans, like, maybe they weren't sure about President Trump, or at least moderates. I don't know. There was a ton of Democratic energy. It was a special election. Democrats dumped, you know, $10 million into the race, gave Lamb a national profile, and somehow he won. Then the PA Supreme Court gerrymandered the state and drew PA 17. Now, PA 17 is still a R plus three or R plus four district. If the district had existed when President Trump ran in 2016, he would have won it by 3 points, right? Or 3 percentage points. So it's still a Trump district. And he beat, what happened was in the next election, they drew Keith Rothfuss's district out of Pennsylvania and they plucked him from his district and they put him in Lamb's, and then you had two incumbents running against one another. Do you remember that? I think it was
vaguely.
Yeah. And, you know, Connor had just come off, you know, what, 2 months prior, $10 million of advertising. They took Keith out of his district. Keith had almost zero name recognition in Connor's district. This was at a time where a midterm election where the Democrats were the top of the ticket, you know, establishment Republicans and Trump Republicans turnout was low. It was just a sort of perfect storm, right? He had Connor had two back-to-back victories. But that's not going to be the case in 2020 because now he has a record. And look, everything that he's campaigned on, everything he's gone back. I'm pro-life. Well, you're not pro-life. You voted against the Born Alive Act twice. Okay. His first campaign ad, Derek, was he was carrying an AR, firing an AR in a range. Well, guess what? Today he has an F rating from the NRA. Oh, he's going to oppose Nancy Pelosi. Guess what? Votes with her over 90% of the time. He's going to support President Trump. Guess what? He voted to impeach the guy twice. So it's just, he's gone back on every single promise. And so now he has a record. This time is going to be different. And look, the president on the ballot is a huge deal. You know,
how do you campaign in the midst? This is one of the things I really wanted to ask you about. You're the only guy I know who's running. How do you campaign as a challenger because, you know, normally you got to go out, you got to kiss the babies, you got to go to the county fairs, you got to go to the parades, you got to go to the openings, you got to go and meet the business people. You can't do any of that. Imagine that makes fundraising difficult and campaigning. There's no door knocking anymore. So as you're, this is all new to you. It's not like anybody's got a handbook. You can't look back at, well, the last time this happened, this is how they did it. How are you cobbling together a campaign? Because I know you've got the know-how. I know you've got the organizational skills, and you've got the passion of a lot of people. But putting that into motion, you have to create a whole new way of campaigning right now. You can't take it off. You can't take, well, I'll take a month off from the campaign. You're not Joe Biden. You can't go disappear into your house and pretend all is well and wait for Bernie to drop out. You have to be out there. You have to find a way to get out there. How do you do that?
Well, you got to leverage social media more, you know, and is that perfect? No. You're right. Door knocking is out the window. So what we've done is we pivot to sort of virtual training, virtual volunteer training. We rely heavily on Zoom to get our volunteers in. And we're doing training every week now with our volunteers. And then what we're doing is we shifted from door knocking to phone banking. You know, obviously door knocking is better. It's preferable. But, you know, we're making phone calls now every single day all across the district. Before this, you know, it's a bummer because, I mean, the pandemic, obviously, for a number of reasons, but we're talking specifically about the campaign now, is that we were doing 3 to 5 events every single day, you know, touring companies and going to the fairs and the parades and all that stuff. And it was so great and fun. I mean, we could go to chili cook-offs. It was awesome. but now it's like,
get fat.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. my waist size is getting bigger and bigger. But, you know, it's a bummer because, you know, you can't do that stuff anymore. So the only thing that we can hope for is a good pandemic response, one where we safeguard our economy and keep the American people healthy. And hopefully this cloud will lift and we can get back to, you know, the ordinary business of campaigning as usual. You know, and fundraising, by the way, fundraising is challenging too, you know, because you still have to do it. You know, but it just feels tone deaf. So many people are struggling right now. And so you got to walk. I guess what I'm saying, Derek, is you got to walk a real fine line. So many people have lost so much over the last couple weeks. But we still have, I think 2020 is looming large, man. And there's still an election and we still got to raise money. And we have to raise money because I've got to get my message out, and getting my message out and his voting record out will be critical to me winning in November. And so we're still doing that. We're still fundraising. We've exceeded, you know, we were in the race, and, you know, when President Trump, by the way, you know how I got in the race? He came to the district and called me out in a speech. Do you know anything about that?
So, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
That old story. You're called out by the president of the United States.
I know. So, you know, I do like charity work with give it away service dogs and stuff. I was down in South Carolina doing something like that. My phone just starts blowing up after we finish an event. And I got like 56 missed calls, some from reporters and mostly from my mom, who watched this speech on TV. President Trump called me out to run against Lamb in Western Pennsylvania. And I was like, well, okay, I guess I'm running now. So I turned my life upside down and got in the race on October 30th. And so we had about 6 weeks to raise money. And in 6 weeks, we raised $270,000, which is well above what we needed to raise. And, you know, we were on track for a Q1, a really, really great Q1 quarter. And I think we still are, but obviously coronavirus and this pandemic has made that more challenging.
This is one point I'd like to make to everybody listening is if you're like me, I live in, you know, a place that's as blue as it gets. I'm in a Smurf's ass. It's so blue. And there are many people across the country, but there are those 30, 35 districts across the country that are purple or are Trump districts that are occupied by Democrats now, where my energy and my efforts and everything in my district, it won't make a difference. So I suggest everybody sort of look to those other districts. Check out those candidates. Check out a Sean Parnell. The website is seanforcongress.co, by the way. And maybe instead of trying to help your local lost cause in a D plus 40 district, adopt a Republican in another district. You all vote on the same things. You know, it's, yes, it'd be nice to have somebody sane representing you where you live. But if that's not an option, pick somebody else across the country and help them that way. You can phone bank remotely. You can, you can't door knock, but you can phone bank remotely. You can get engaged in social media. You can donate. You can do all of those things from wherever you happen to be in the United States. Am I correct?
Yeah. And look, I mean, we have got, if you want this lunacy in our government to stop, we've got to take back the House, you know? Otherwise, I mean, once this pandemic passes, when it does, and it will, I mean, Democrats are already talking about impeachment 2.0. I mean, that's just, it's just insane. And I'm glad that you brought up that in January, while Democrats were, you know, holding committees on the, on a sham of an impeachment and appointing impeachment managers, this virus and a plague was growing in China and spreading all around the world while everybody in our government was distracted on a sham impeachment of Donald Trump. That's dereliction of duty. And every single Democrat that did that needs to be voted out of office. Ground zero for that fight is right here in Western Pennsylvania in PA 17. Pennsylvania, I mean, the president, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he needs to win Pennsylvania to go back to the White House. And he needs to win PA 17, which is the district I'm running in, to win Pennsylvania. There is no path to victory for him in Pennsylvania unless he wins PA 17. Now, he's going to win, and I am as well, but I can't do it without the help of the American people. You know, national money put Connor Lamb in that seat, and I need the American people to galvanize behind me to help me take it back for them.
Well, Lord knows this country owes you enough, and I know you'd never say that, and you're probably going to chew me out for having said it, but I'm going to say it anyway. In the last couple of minutes we have left, Sean, and again, the website is seanforcongress.co. I've got to ask about your novels. I got to ask about the books, because we were promised a third Eric Steele novel. Now, it seems to me like you got some time to write right now. I read somewhere the other day that Volume 3 is on track to be released in September. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And I'm so psyched about it, man. This is by far the best book I've ever written. You're going to get, and I know you and I talked about this, but you're going to get more answers on what happened to Eric Steele's dad. And the Alpha program has their backs up against the wall, and Eric Steele's left to figure out all those challenges. But yes, it's still on track for a September 2020 release.
How far into it are you? And when the hell do you find time to write while running for Congress? How do you not have nothing but gray hair right now? You got kids too. Jesus.
I know. I do have a lot. I feel like I do have a lot more gray hair now than I did in October when I first got in. Yes. But I finished the book in January. It's turned into my publisher. They've got it right now. So it's just in pre-publication, like designing the cover and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't
There's
know
nothing how this legally is stopping you from just accidentally emailing me the draft, right?
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure I get in trouble.
I'm still going to buy the audiobook, damn it. It was that good.
Oh, man. I think you're really going to like this one. This book is just, it's better than the first two. And that's the goal as a writer, you get a fiction writer, you get better every book, you know, become a more sophisticated storyteller every book. But this book, it's done. I turned it in January, and right now I'm working on the fourth one, just sort of plotting out the fourth one. But again, this whole pandemic has thrown a wrench in all that as well. So
is it going to be incorporated, something like this, into your novels?
I don't see how it couldn't. You know, if I were writing a book during World War II, I mean, World War II was such a global event. It was reflected in most of the writing at the time. I don't see how a global pandemic like the one that we're in right now isn't incorporated into the story. So it probably is not going to be the main plot, but it will certainly be, you know, part of the setting and backdrop.
Do we have a title for Volume 3 yet?
Yes, we do. It's called One True Patriot.
One True Patriot, Sean Parnell, and it's due out in September.
Yep, tentatively right now, but again,
So right in the heat of your campaign.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my publisher's in New York. New York is on lockdown. I don't know how the pandemic affects the publication of it, but right now it's still set for September 2020.
Well, you better come back on the show when that comes in, and I'd love to have you back on before then, just to continue to follow this race, because again, there are really a handful of districts that are bellwethers for everything in this country, and your district there in PA 17 is definitely one of them. The website is seanforcongress.co. The man is Sean Parnell. His books, the Eric Steele novels, Man of War and All Out War, and the big New York Times bestseller, Outlaw Platoon. Dude, I appreciate you. Not that you had anything better to do today. You weren't going to go outside, but I appreciate you taking the time to, because I was always curious, how in the hell, there are a lot of challengers out there that already have a tough road, a hoe for them, and now you can't go out and do the traditional campaigning. Are you seeing other people, other candidates? I imagine that there's a little bit of a brotherhood of you know, challengers out there, a network. You've had some Washington types come out there, senators and congressmen come out and endorse you. Are you hearing other things from other candidates about, wow, you know, if you came up with a good idea, or somebody in Michigan came up with a really good idea, a good way to campaign sort of without campaigning, is there a way to spread that around to everybody?
Oh, for sure. We do, I don't want to say weekly, but maybe bi-weekly calls. You know, hey, this was a good fundraising gig for me. I mean, right now, one of the things that we're trying to lay the groundwork for is virtual fundraising. And you know, it's never really been done before. But again, just like when you're in combat, you know, everybody has a plan until they get hit with the first punch. So it's very, very important as an organization that we're able to shift fire pretty quickly to adapt to the environment that we're in. And so, yeah, this pandemic crisis has thrown a wrench in our operation for sure. But, you know, I'm still engaging with the volunteers, communicating on social media, all in a virtual way. And like I said, when this pandemic lifts, we're going to be back out on the ground, you know, working our butts off every day until November when we win.
Amen, brother. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks, Derek. Stay safe.
You too, Sean. You too. I'm back now live, or at least on tape, just to wrap it up. Love Sean Parnell. And is seanforcongress.co, by the way, if you want to help. SEANFORCongress.co. If you want to volunteer, you want to donate, you want to do all of the above, or you just want to follow him on Twitter. Good, good dude. Served this country well, and is looking to do it again. I support him 100%. All right, that is all the time we have for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. We're going to keep this little format for a while because there really is nothing else going on in the world except coronavirus stuff. So I want to see how the world is dealing with this and bring you interesting conversations as best we can. Thank you for listening. Even the haters who write mean reviews on iTunes. Have a good day. Tomorrow's Wednesday already. We're almost back to the weekend, which means we get to stay in and do nothing again on the weekend. But still, it's a weekend. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.